The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to have you on board with me for a couple of hours on this Saturday, July 27th, 2013. It's a beautiful sunny day here in South Texas, where it almost always is sunny, and the same can be said for Athens, Greece, where I am connected by Skype with Andrew Anglin. Greetings, Andrew. It's great to have you on the program today.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I want to thank you for all the special efforts you made to make this possible, because as you have said, internet is not as reliable in Greece as it is here in the United States, and you've done everything you could to make sure that we can have a good conversation today. I appreciate that. And it's very exciting. Even more so because today happens to be your 29th birthday.
Yeah, it is.
Well, you know, I know everybody's wishing you a happy birthday, and it was something that just kind of came up by accident, and that we had scheduled this several weeks ago already for you to be on today. I didn't know it was be your birthday, but that's really great. How wonderful to be 29, and you've got another year to go before you're 30.
Yeah, whole year.
And, you know, being 30 is really a great time. It's great to actually to get out of your 20s and into more what people consider more mature age levels.
Yeah.
You've been doing so much. You've done a great job with everything you have everything you put forth since you kind of came on the scene, really not all that long ago. I know you've been on the internet for several, you know, many years, or not many, but a number of years, but you weren't so well known. And you've really been moving along. And I want to talk to you about your latest news website, The Daily Stormer. And but first, I think the thing that the listeners most want to know about and are really waiting for is your experience of being in Athens, and to give us as much of the personal side of it as you're willing to tell. Can you do
that?
Yeah,
okay.
All right.
Sure. Well, I've been here about, I guess, a little over a month now. It's been great. It's a fantastic place. The city is wonderful, even with all these problems that they're having. The people are great. Not so much, you know, they're very much not a lot different, I wouldn't say, than Americans, as far as the way they think and behave. But there's a lack of political correctness here, which is wonderful. You can't hardly start a conversation with anybody and get into anything political without them mentioning the Jews. So this has been very refreshing. I've been living at a hotel, and I actually started working here. So on the personal side, everything is very good. And on the side of looking at this political stuff and, you know, attending meetings of Chris Yavi, the Golden Dawn, everything has been going great.
Yeah, and, you know, it's almost nobody expected anything different because of the way you just go all out for things and just do it, you know? You're like that the Nike thing. I hate to bring up Nike, but anyway, you know, isn't it? Just do it, and you're one of those just do it people. And that's we really are blessed with having you be that way. So there you are. You just go off, and you've made all these friends, and there already, and meet all these people. You're very social, aren't you? I mean, you're very easy with people, and you talk to people, And tell us about that, how you do that since you got there, how you connect with people.
Well, yeah, I enjoy people. This is a part of my personality. I'm a social type of person. And meeting people here is very easy. A lot of people don't really speak very much English, but those who do are very friendly and open. So it's been very easy to make friends here. I met a lot of people. I made a lot of supporters of the Golden Dawn, and I've met a lot of people in the organization. The young people, this is something I'm very proud of, I have to say, that a lot of the young people who speak the better English actually already knew my site, Total Fascism, before I ever met them. So
right.
That was, you know, a proud moment. But,
I guess.
The Greeks, are a fantastic group, and I've also been meeting a lot of people from different parts of Europe, because I'm living at this hotel. I'm actually staying at a different hotel tonight because the hotel that I normally live at does not have as stable of internet. But it's kind of a birthday present too for myself. This hotel is a little bit nicer, but I live at this hotel, which is it's like a hostel for the most part. They have some private rooms, but most of the rooms are hostel rooms. So you get all these people from all over the world coming through there, and this has been a very good experience. And I'm working at the hotel, running a tour of the Acropolis sites here, the ancient sites, which include the Parthenon there in the center of the city.
Yeah, you made such a good impression on the hotel owner where you've been staying, and somebody there who I guess worked for him and speaks English, suggested that maybe you could get a deal on your rent or get a free room or something if you did tours, and it all worked out. I mean, the guy really happy with you, and you started taking people on tours, and, it's working out real well, and you enjoy it. So tell us more about that. I think it's pretty great.
Well, yeah, I studied this stuff when I was younger, particularly the mythology, but a lot of the history as well of the Greeks and the Romans. So it's been pretty easy. You know, I haven't thought a whole lot about this stuff in the last few years, but it kind of starts coming back to you. I'm learning new things, and I think I'm doing a pretty good job with this tour, and it's very enjoyable walking around the city every day. I'm probably going to get melanoma, but I guess I can worry about that in a few years.
Well, no, I've cautioned you, and I'm sure other people have too, to get a hat, and you still only have a baseball cap that you're wearing. You need to get a big hat somehow or get something.
I could get a cowboy hat is what I've been thinking.
Well,
but you know. I've got a baseball cap. It's mostly on my arms. I get most of the sun, but I'll probably be all right.
Well, you're right. It's not just your face. Well, I do think you should. I know sun's here. I'm becoming, you know, motherly here, which I do. But sunscreen has got a bad rap, but it's probably a better idea to use it when you're going out to the Acropolis. Than nothing, and you're so hot you don't want to put on long sleeve clothing, right? I mean, tell us about the temperature.
It's sometimes 100 degrees, right about 98 throughout the 10 to 2, and sometimes even later it stays up real high. Right now it's 9 o'clock here, a little bit after 9. And it's probably still about 90 degrees outside, even though the sun's gone down now. So it's
well,
very
right
hot.
When it gets that hot in sunny climates, it takes a long time in the evening for the temperature to go down. I've experienced that. But is this a dry climate, and does it actually cool down quite a bit? You know, in the dark part of the night, in early morning.
It is a pretty dry climate, but it, for whatever reason, it doesn't really seem to cool down that much at night. I mean, it does some, definitely, but not as much as you might think. But it's not humid here, no.
Well, that's always better. You know, where I live in South Texas, it's normally not humid unless there's been a bit of, you know, quite a bit of rain. But in the summertime, like now, although we're being lucky right at the moment, but it's not unusual at all for it to be reach 100 during the hottest part of the day and to stay, you know, very warm until after midnight, you know, pretty warm. But then temperature does go down at night, and in the morning it's pretty nice. So there's a difference here than there. So the climate is more challenging.
It probably is because there's a lot of sand in Texas. I guess there's not so much here, but
well, it's kind of rocky. It's kind of rocky where I am.
It's similar to Texas weather, though. That's as far as wherever else I've been. That's what I would compare it to, is the kind of heat that's in Texas. Because when you are in the shade, it's not that bad. So you know, doing the tours, it's kind of moving from shady spot to shady spot.
Said that you were fine. There were shady spots that you'd gather your tour group to when you would talk to them and explain things to them and so on. You'd stay in the shade. And I'm sure they appreciate that too. So tell us about, you're meeting some young women too. You're meeting a lot of girls, who I call girls, but from various countries. And that's interesting for you.
Yeah, well, I'm meeting all kinds of people, not just girls, but yeah, meeting people from all over the world. It's very interesting. This is one of the things I've enjoyed the most. That's why I decided to stay at this hotel rather than try and get a flat. It's very, very nice to talk to all these different people and get an impression. I mean, you can see really the differences in the different types of European peoples. One thing that's kind of interesting, I didn't know how many white people there were in South America. I mean, I knew Argentina and Uruguay, but I didn't know that there were so many in Chile, Peru even. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about this. So this has been very nice to meet these people. I think they're some of the best folks I've met are from this area. So it's been very interesting to me. And I'm meeting people from all over Europe as well and getting to see the different attitudes of people. The woman who is working at the hotel I stay at is German. And this is very funny, the cultural differences. She married a Greek man and she's been here for, I don't know how many years, probably 40. But she still has gets very irritated with the Greek people. So it's kind of funny. I sometimes feel a little bit bad for her because she seems to be angry so often. But it's kind of funny just to see those cultural differences.
Well, what is she angry at? Somehow I missed that. What is she angry about?
Well, the way Greek people do things, it's very laid back. The way they handle business, the way they handle all sorts of things is not, they're not German, so they're not running things, you know, as Germans and other Northern Europeans would run things, not running such a tight ship, I guess you could say.
Yes. Well, you know, that's one thing that I wouldn't mind discussing this just a little bit, because I do think this points out the differences in European peoples, in that while they can even fall in love and get married and they can live in other countries, they still have these differences which can make one European person irritated or impatient or whatever with other European people. And for this reason, I see, and let me just throw this out here, I see Golden Dawn, and it's a wonderful success, which is, of course, the attack is going to come even worse than it's been so far, and I've got a little article here that kind of points some of that out that I will mention, but the great success that they've had, and it's thrilling for everyone to see, you know, how strong they are and how committed they are. But I don't, you know, what I would say would be the hope coming from that is that other nationalist parties and peoples in the other nations of Europe, find inspiration in that and find strength in that and go make more progress on their own, or just maybe make the people of that nation, say if it's Germany, Germans, it's hard to imagine, but to become more willing to speak out and discuss and, you know, and to get away from the politically correct attitude. And so that we have all these nations becoming stronger on their own, rather than forming something under Greece's leadership for the whole of Europe.
Well, I think that's also what the Golden Dawn is envisioning. They're very much looking at the rest of Europe and the various nationalist parties, and because I mean, they're doing very, very well here. I mean, it's fantastic. It's almost shocking how much support they have. And when you talk to normal people that are like, you know, I'm a little bit nervous about it, I think they're the only hope. You know, this is about, it's the majority of people you get these responses from. So especially the majority of working class type normal people. That's something I could talk about as well. The just how normal most of the people involved are. It's worth talking about the different kinds of people who have become involved with this organization. But I think that they kind of understand that even though everything is looking very good inside of Greece, and that they're going on this path, that if they just keep at it, it's just going to keep getting better and better for them. At the same time, what would happen if they became the, you know, the ruling power of Greece? Which I don't think that's something that they should be, you know, focusing on trying to figure out right now. I mean, they're still dealing with their own situation here, but it seems like if that were to happen, there would be a pretty big risk of you know, if not a full-on NATO invasion, that the West, the Jews, could arm Turkey or, you know, Albania, one of these neighboring countries, and they could stage some kind of, you know, like a some type of event. What was that? Like happened in with Poland and World War II, you know, and get this all started here, and then. So, you know, it's kind of, it's difficult to think to that level, but I think they are thinking about this, and what they're looking to are the other nationalist organizations in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
None of which are doing as well, besides Jobbik, I guess.
Right.
Greece only has a
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, Greece only has a population of about 10 to 11 million people, so there's not really any way they could. I don't know if they could. If America was supplying arms to Turkey, you know, it would be a difficult situation.
Well, I think that they will. I don't doubt at all that they will do something, whatever they have to do to stop it. You know, as time goes on, they will. But let me just throw in here real quick, you know, once in a while, your voice is a little slow in coming through. We talked about that right before the show started. And you said mine was, too. And I just want to ask the listeners who are listening, if they're hearing everything fine, to send me an email, one way or the other, carolyn@carolynyager.com. If you're having any problem at all, if you're not having any problem, don't bother. But if you're having anything that you could report, please do so, because we don't really know, but I hope if it's only what I'm hearing from you, Andre, that it's fine. You know, there's no problem with making everything out. It's just an occasional little break. Now, okay, so, well, do you know, the plans? I mean, you say, you know, of course, there. How do you know how the Greeks are working? How Golden Dawn people are working with other parties? We know that they are in contact all over the world, actually, with Greeks, and certainly in the United States too.
Well, I don't know the details of what extent of contact they're having with these other parties, but I know it's something when you talk to different people at the rallies that this is and the things that I go to that this is something of an issue that they're thinking a lot about the other nationalist parties in Europe and hoping for their success, obviously.
Well, yeah. So let's talk about the rallies. So you talk. Tell us about the rallies you've been to and that you saw and came in contact with a very important figure at the last one, I think. And the last one is the one that got so much publicity. So what can you tell us about that?
This is the only proper rally that I've been to, which wasn't actually a proper rally. It was there was a rallying aspect to it, but it was a food bank. It was a food donation where over 10,000 people, Greeks, no Pakistanis or Iraqis or Turkish, were given food by the Golden Dawn. Makaliakos, who is the leader, the big guy with the glasses, who people have I'm sure seen pictures of, gave a speech. Supposedly they played the NSDAP's national anthem. You say that Horst Wessel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Horst, yes. What's known popularly as the Horst Wessel song.
Right. Yes. I didn't actually hear this. I arrived a little bit late, so I'm not, that's kind of something where that's both something they would maybe do as well as something that the media would make up. So I can't say for sure that they did or didn't play this song.
Well, somewhere I read that it was it could be heard on a video of the event, but then that could have been added, but they probably did. I wouldn't see any reason why they maybe.
Yes, I believe they probably did, but I haven't had a chance to ask anybody who would know the song yet. So
in fact, it was though a Greek version that they used the melody or the words to some extent or whatever and have made it into a Greek song. That's what I read.
Yes, translation of it. Yes.
Yeah. They weren't presenting it as a National Socialist song necessarily or a German song or anything like that.
Yeah, but this is kind of a funny issue the way they have to deal with this whole thing. I could talk about that a little bit later, but Kassidiaris was there giving out food. He was up on the stage. This is the young guy. He's just a little bit older than me, maybe 32, 33. He was there. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I got to see him. I got to wave to him, but didn't get a chance to talk to him yet. But he was there. The guy with the goatee and the shaved head was also there. All the figures. His name is Panayotoros. So it was great. It was all the boys, you know, were lined up and they were singing and they were chanting. They chant. It translates into blood, honor, Golden Dawn. Is what they chant, and they wave the flags, they march. It's really amazing and inspiring what this is like to witness this type of a thing. There's no way that a person who hasn't witnessed it could really understand the feeling you get when you see all these, you know, young men in black shirts in very good shape, all standing in a line, carrying flags, marching and singing. It's an incredibly powerful, it's like a tribal thing, you know. I talk about this concept of everything going back to our tribal roots, and it's very much this when you witness this. So it was very powerful. And the food, this was fantastic, the amount of food that they gave out to the Greek people. And I think this is wonderful that they're doing this. You know, they are national socialists. Well, what they say social nationalist, but I mean, the ideology is obviously national socialism. The media and everybody already knows about the nationalism, and I think that the way you win people's hearts, the hearts of the masses, is through the socialism aspect of it. And so it's wonderful that they're doing this. And the Golden Dawn parliament members, the salary for a Greek parliament member is 10,000 euros per month, which is a pretty serious amount of money. That's like what? How much?
$1.30. It's $1.30 is the exchange. That's a third more over the 10,000. Yeah.
So $13,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so they give.
Made so much.
You never.
No, I never made so. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot. You can do a lot with that every month. I'll tell you, that's what considered high. But that's what MPs get.
Yes, and what the Golden Dawn does is they keep 2,000 each, and then they give the other 8,000 into the charity programs that they run. So this is where the majority of the money, most of the supporters, as it happens, are from the poverty line. So they're not getting, you know, too many donations. So the most of the money for these charity programs is coming from the giving up of the salary by these MPs.
That's fantastic. Now, I never heard or read that anywhere. And no wonder they would want it. They don't want them to be able to get into Parliament, because then they have money, government money like these others have, and they can then support the party with it. That's great. They keep 2,000, which is enough. So that's really fantastic. How many Golden Dawn MPs are there now?
I think 13.
Okay. Well, okay, you were right. I said that wrong to say you've been at a few rallies. You went to you were invited to some meetings, or you know, you requested and they let you come to some meetings. And then this was the first actual rally. So how were the meetings, and what were you able to see there? Now you're located not far from the Golden Dawn headquarters. Is that the main headquarters in Athens, or just the headquarters?
It was the main headquarters. After it got bombed last time, they switched to a different building, which is not it's in a different area. But that is where the members of parliament have their offices. It's not really open to the public ever, what is now considered to be the main offices. This was just not too long ago that they transferred it over there. You can still see some of the damage at the building from where they set a bomb off there. So the offices that I go to for the public meetings, they have several of these offices. I think there's a few in Athens, but this is the main one in Athens. And they have meetings three times a week. I try to go all 3 days. I didn't go tonight because I thought after that rally, they were probably going to have a lot of people speaking, and I might not be able to get on with you. They start at 7. They're usually finished up by 8:30, but I would think they would be going over all the stuff with the results of the rally. And it's kind of rude to get up and walk out, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, all in Greek. It's all in Greek, so what do you understand of it? Or you just enjoy the environment?
Well, yeah, the speeches are all in Greek, but it's also kind of a social gathering place, and a lot of people speak English, and people are interested to talk to me because, you know, there's not any other people there that aren't Greek, and I think they're they're excited to have me there. Proud to have somebody from outside the country so interested in them. So I've made a lot of friends there. It's very nice.
Yeah, great. Okay.
The meetings are basically like educational, I would say, to a large extent. You would there's different. Sometimes they have members of parliament there. Sometimes it's various other members of the party, and they give speeches about different topics. They show educational videos, and people get together and talk with each other. And the leadership is very open with the people, you know, shaking everyone's hand and talking to anybody who has a question. It's very much an open thing, and these people are all. Like the NSDAP, they're very much working class people, and that comes through very clearly in their behavior and their demeanor, the way they deal with the people. What's interesting to talk about are the people who are going to the meetings. What type of people are there? It was a little bit surprising to me at first how normal, I guess, the people there were. Not that I expected them to be a bunch of weirdos, but what I did expect was mainly, you know, young men. And really, it's all types of people. There's a lot of elderly people in their 60s, even 70s, who are very supportive. They're there at every meeting listening to the speeches. A 75-year-old man actually, just before I got here, got stabbed leaving the building. So now they're trying to be more careful with the older people, because these anarchists will attack the weakest people that they can find.
Is this the group that you showed the video and they were pulling them out of a car, or is this a different incident?
This is a different thing. That was just yesterday. That was a 60-year-old man that's probably going to die, that they beat and stabbed. Yeah, and the media is not reporting these things at all. If any member, not even a member, anybody in a black shirt beats up an immigrant, this is all over the news. And most likely, if they beat up the immigrant, it was because he was doing something.
That's right.
But, you know, when 75-year-old or 60-year-old men get attacked and stabbed, it's you hear nothing about it on the media if they're associated with the Golden Dawn.
Well, the Golden Dawn has its own media, doesn't it? It has some media. It has at least newspapers or something, or some way. What do they have? And I don't mean to interrupt your train of thought. Sorry.
No, they do have a party paper. I think it's published once a week. And then they have the website, which is pretty good.
You know, only the people interested are seeing that, and the vast majority of people are just getting this bull from the Jewish media, day after day after day.
Yes, but
influenced by it.
That's one of the reasons, besides the obvious reasons of helping the people. One of the reasons that these food drives have been so positive is that the media is forced to cover them. The first one got shut down. It was in Syntagma, which is the main square in front of the Parliament building, and they sent the riot police in to stop the Golden Dawn from giving out food. So, I mean, this was very, very good publicity. I don't even have any idea why the government would do that, to send the riot police in to stop people from giving food to the poor. You know, there were a lot of homeless people out there and such that they were giving this food to, and elderly people. And they send the riot police in to stop them because they refuse to feed these sickening Africans and Pakistanis. So this was very good publicity for them. They do get – when Kasidiaris especially gives speeches in parliament, they're always on TV. you know, obviously with commentary before and after saying, oh my God, this Nazi. But they do show his speeches, and he gives very good speeches. I guess last week he gave a speech about the taxes that a small business owner pays compared to a manual laborer, compared to a member of the parliament. And this was something a lot of people were talking about, because the media was forced to show it. I guess they weren't forced, but people are pretty interested when this guy is on TV. Or rather, when he gives speeches, people want to see them, so they do show these. So they're getting the message out, but not to the same extent that they're being beaten to death by the media and refusing. The media is refusing to cover things like the continual attacks, the violence against the Golden Dawn, its members and its supporters. It's pretty brutal what these anarchists do. They're wearing masks, covering their faces, and like this one in Patras yesterday, it's posted on the Daily Stormer, the video of the aftermath. This was 50 people, attacked these five people. Who one of them was old, one of them was pretty not in very good shape. There was a woman there, and they attacked them all with knives and baseball bats. 50 people wearing masks. So this whole thing, I'm kind of – go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's just hard to imagine that people like that are not considered an antisocial element, or that okay, so the government doesn't – or the law enforcement doesn't want to go after him or something, but you'd think that there would be people or newspapers or something that would at least, you know, speak about it, because it's so blatant to allow something like that to happen and these people get away from it, get away with it.
Yeah, when the anarchists riot or they attack the cops or whatever, because they do that as well, that gets coverage. It's just things to do with the attacks on the Golden Dawn or their supporters that don't get any.
Well, it gets coverage, but you know what happens to them? I mean, maybe a few of them get some kind of sentence.
Nothing.
Short.
Nothing.
But then they're basically they just all
baseball bats and stab.
Uh oh.
Are you still there?
Oh yeah, I'm still here. That was just a little blip. Okay, go on. Stabbed, you said.
Yeah, this attack where there's baseball bats and stabbings. 25 people were arrested and they were released. All 25 of them. Nobody was charged with anything. And these people were put in the hospital. So it's clear that, you know, the state itself is making sure these people are not punished, at least for this purpose. And I mean, the level of organization that these anarchists have, that they're talking about no gods and no masters, no leaders. The degree of organization, I mean, it's clear, just obvious by looking at it, that there's some group of Jews somewhere getting all this stuff together, organized, with these people who are probably unemployed teenagers into their early or mid 20s who want to put on these masks and go beat up people all in a pack. And cowardly. I mean, who stabs a 75-year-old man? This is it. I mean, especially when you're in a large group. You can't even take on the 75-year-old man by yourself. You go in a group wearing masks. Nobody in the Golden Dawn wears a mask.
Mm-hmm.
These are all – and these people are very, very brave. There's old people who go there even though they know the place is bombed, that anarchists could stab them when they're leaving. There's mothers that go there with their children. You know, these people are very, very brave. I want to make a point of saying that, because it's incredibly inspiring. And I just think of these men on the internet who I know are, you know, men in their 20s and 30s who are afraid the Jews are going to come get them at their house if they say something on the internet. It's sickening. But
well, yeah, yeah, and I know what. But you know what? The thought that came to me as you're saying this, though, is that can't the Golden Dawn people help these people like this old man who was stabbed make a police complaint? I mean, what happens? Don't these people want to complain to the police and see something done about it, or do they? And then they go into the court and then they let them go.
You couldn't get. I mean, mask. People, the police won't respond really if you call and say, you know, 50 people in masks rushed me. There's no way for them to deal with that even. They're not going to go into where they know the anarchists are and just arrest them all and, you know, put them in a concentration camp or something. They can't prove anything. And the police, the courts, I mean, the whole thing is really a mess right now. The police are pretty well tied up. They don't do very much. And they keep getting cut. They keep cutting the police as part of this austerity thing.
Oh yeah, that's right. They're doing that, and they're trying to do that everywhere, so that there won't be the law enforcement. If the people on the right get more power, they don't want them to have any law enforcement to enforce the laws.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what Cassidiaris a couple weeks ago said this in the parliament. He said, you know, because it's the most likely thing, probably, that he's going to be elected mayor of Athens in May.
Yeah, that's too bad.
So
it's so long right away now, when you say May. That's May of 2014.
Yeah.
It's only July. What?
Yeah,
it's 10 months from now. 8 months from now.
Yeah. They've cut the police, though, here, the municipal police, and he got up and said, you know, they're doing this because they know I'm going to be mayor. They don't want me to have the police forces to clean up the city once I get elected. Because, I mean, he would get rid of all this stuff that's going on here. I mean, he would get rid of this sickening spray paint everywhere, the drug addicted prostitutes who lay out in the parks, and all these immigrants.
Well, tell us about the immigrants. You know, how do you? What has been your experience with them? You know, for your own self.
Well, the immigrant population in Athens is somewhere between 30% and 50% of the city.
Wow.
So this is massive, massive number of these people.
Ooh, that's in Athens, because as always, these people go to the cities. Right? I mean, it's not
yeah,
that
yeah.
way.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the country, it's probably about 10 to 15%, but the majority of them are here in the city of Athens. And that's why the Golden Dawn has such strong support here, because the people here can understand what this issue is with these sickening people. The majority of these people are from Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, now Syria, Turkey, of course, and then a good number of them are sub-Saharan Africans. I don't actually know where they're from, but they're black as night. A good portion of them, not probably about 15 to 20% of them that I see are these really dark, just rough looking African blacks. But these people are all sickening. The one group of people who I will say I do not find totally sickening are the Bangladeshis. They're the only people I can say are somewhat respectful, and they don't look at you just like they want to kill you and eat your heart, like these Arab blacks look at you. I mean, when you're walking down the street, they just look at you this way. I mean, maybe it's because I'm, you know, walking around with a shaved head, like. But I think they look at the women this way. It was actually the Turks are, there's a lot of Turks, but they're more more civilized than these Arabs and the blacks, the Pakistanis. And there was a Turkish girl. She was freaking out about these immigrants, really afraid of these people. I mean, I haven't heard that much about rapes here, but I'm sure they happen quite a bit. And something like Turkish women would be more likely to be raped because they wouldn't report it. So it's a bad situation. I mean, they're constantly robbing people. They just last night, this French guy got his window broken out. He had to call the police. I don't know why he had a car here, actually. He's from France. I must have drove here, I guess. Anyway, he had his window broken out, and they went through all his stuff. Most people here know the trick that you just don't leave anything in your car and you leave the doors unlocked because then they won't bust your window out. But they break into shops constantly. They're always on the street yelling, screaming in their monkey language. You know, it's just a horrible situation to have this many Muslims on the street of the city just as an invading force. Nobody likes them. It's not like and here in the center of the city, you can't get away from them. I mean, they're everywhere. They're like a disease, like an insect infestation just walking everywhere. And then they have their neighborhoods, and if you turn down the wrong street and end up in one of these neighborhoods, it's just like you've actually walked into Iraq or wherever. And they're all out there in their robes trying to sell you prostitutes and all types of drugs. They'll actually pull the drugs out. There's sometimes prostitutes that are half naked in these alley streets that they point at. I mean, they're just filthy, sickening people.
Gosh. And it's not only in Athens where stuff like this is going on. Oh, well, I wanted to ask you a couple of things. We've got only about 10 minutes before our break. So one is, do most of the Golden Dawn members, the male ones, you know, have tattoos? Or the big guys who wear the black T-shirts and so on and do a lot of security and so on. Do they mostly have, a lot of them have, or a lot of tattoos, or maybe one or two, or are there any that don't have any?
There's probably some that don't have any tattoos, but as far as the real big security guys, I'm friends with one of the pretty, he's a higher level security guy, and he's very intelligent. He very much understands the issues, but you have an element there that is more, I guess, there for more primal type reasons, and that's who make up a large portion of the security forces. I mean, they're there because on a more primal level, they view these immigrants as their enemy. So I guess you would say like meathead type guys who are very aggressive, who serve as the security forces for the organization. And most of those guys have a few or a lot of tattoos, yeah.
Okay, but now they're pretty well disciplined, aren't they? Or do sometimes, is it true that sometimes some of these guys with tattoos and their black shirt, T-shirts and stuff, do go out and beat up some people? But as you said earlier, they were doing something, but, you know, they take, you know, they might do things like that because that's the way they are. That's the way they view these people. And then that gets reported, or how much of that is there, you know?
I don't know. I can't really comment on that. I mean, I know in some situations the Golden Dawn takes calls for, you know, if a crime's committed, people call them to deal with that. So in these types of situations, they do, you know, use force if they're responding to a crime. Whether or not they actually go out and just beat up immigrants randomly. I think this is largely invented by the media. There's certainly no policy of the organization to encourage anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, then the other thing I wanted to bring up is that the enemies of the Golden Dawn and of social nationalism are always bringing up democracy, and you know they always using this with the people to tell them, oh, they're going to lose their democracy, they're going to be under this brutal fascist type government, you know, and I think this is a very effective still. But you have any comments on that for how it's done in Greece?
Well, on Wednesday the rally was on the anniversary of the establishment of the modern Greek democracy, which was 74. So they chose this day purposefully, and obviously the other parties, these leftist types, and I guess some of them are supposedly center, but it's all just the same nonsense politicians playing these games that we're all very familiar with. They said, you know, they're disgusted that they would use that day, the celebration of democracy, to do their own rally and give away this food. But I believe personally that the organization, I mean, obviously I believe this, that they represent a freedom that, you know, we've never really been able to understand within these democracies. But yes, they use that. They use that word a lot. I don't know. I don't think Greeks are so prone to caring about that because they've had a history of not really having that much of this British-style democracy. I mean, their own form of democracy was completely different. The ancient form had no relationship at all to the modern British system of parliamentary democracy. So I don't think it's something that really has a lot of effect. I mean, it's the same thing with the racism. Maybe that would work on people who don't live in Athens. I'm not sure, talking about the racism constantly. But they're less susceptible to this stuff. They don't have the political correctness here. Like I say, I mean, anybody that you talk to is going to start bringing up Jews. Even the leftist type people bring up this Jewish problem. So they do not have the political correctness that the rest of the, well, probably not the Eastern European countries, but what we have in America and what they have in Western Europe doesn't
right.
exist.
Right. And you know, I think that Mikhailo Liako's statements about democracy, his answer to that charge was excellent, which he had in his speech, that what he said, I don't have it here, but what he said democracy really is, really, you know, robbery of, by the financial elite and et cetera, et cetera. And what I really like so much about him and the way he leads this party is that they come right out and face these issues and tell the truth about it, like about democracy. And this is hard to do, but I think he did it very well. Of course, somebody like me, I'm sympathetic, but, you know, because democracy is just this magic word and concept. And if you back down or if you try to say, well, we're democratic, you know, and put that word in your party name and so on, or, you know, you're trying to appease or please or not be attacked. But, you know, if democracy is what we know it is, and we don't want it, we have to, find a way to say it. And that's what they're doing. And I don't know anybody else who actually does that quite so well. I don't comes because even the Jobbik, they don't say, well, we'd, I don't know, I know I'm thinking about the government there, but I don't know if they've actually spoke so strongly that they're not so in favor of democracy. They probably have, the party probably has, but go ahead.
The Golden Dawn is very, very clear that they do not support this system and that they believe the parliamentary system is just a joke and that they're only doing that in order to gain power. I believe they openly say that if they had power, they would, I mean, don't, I'm not exactly sure that they've said it in this many words, but that they would pretty much just abolish the parliament. They've said they think it's a joke, and the only reason that they're involved in it at all is because it exists, and this is the way that they can gain power. They do not make compromises, and they do not make statements in order to appease any of these propaganda forces or make it seem like they're more moderate than the core following actually is. They have not compromised on anything at all, and I believe that's why they're doing so well.
Well, I think so. I hope so, because I hope people are ready to hear the truth about these things. But this, the criticism of them is always that they're out to destroy democracy. And, we've got 60 seconds. You got any more you want to say before we go off on our break about these subjects, Andre?
Yeah, I probably do. I don't know if I have anything I can say in 60 seconds. But I think the honesty and the openness of it is really very appealing to people on a because I think inside people know how much of a joke these words actually are and how they're used just for emotional purposes, and that we've seen our whole lives that they don't really have any true meaning. Things like democracy and
yeah.
And
well, it's I was so sold on it from a school kid and all that I never questioned it, and it's been taking me a while to finally get around to where I could see it the way I do now. And I'm sure it's difficult for people, so that's a powerful thing that they still have to use. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager on Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. And my guest today is Andrew Anglin. Andre, and of TotalFascism.com and also now DailyStormer.com. But we've been talking about Greece, where he is currently living and has, as he has said himself, has no plans on leaving anytime soon. We've been talking about the Golden Dawn Party and what's going on in Athens. And he's live from Athens right now. And thank goodness, Andre, we've been having a great connection, no problems. You knew that you weren't going to have any problems. And being your birthday, there's no way the universe could make a problem for you, right? Being today is your birthday.
Yeah, I don't think the universe would do that to me.
No, because you know that the universe likes you. So, okay, this democracy thing just stayed on my mind during the break, and I just say that democracy is so connected with internationalism, and it favors internationalism. That's why internationalists favor democracy, and you can oppose it to actually democracy. The opposing thing would be nationalism, seems to me, where you have you are united with people by blood, language, culture, and in a geographical area, not where people can just come and go and fit in. And that's the problem with democracy, and why they defend it so much, and why they want to keep it something that people kind of worship. You know, it's another one of these religious things. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree completely. I mean, like Makaliakos said, it's the ability to just loot the place because nobody's held responsible for anything. This is in Mein Kampf, I think chapter 4 or 5 maybe, where he explains the way this British system, which is what we all basically have. I mean, that's what a Congress or a Parliament. It's from England originally. The way it's set up so that nobody is responsible for anything and blame for everything can be passed around, and they can get away with anything, especially with this media, where basically dictates the way people vote based on stirring up emotions in people. It's a complete joke. It obviously can't work. Most people are not don't have enough time in their lives, even assuming that they have the level of intelligence necessary. They don't have enough time in their lives to go through and find out all the details about all these different issues that you would have to know in order to participate in the way a government is run, which is what they're asking you to do ostensibly in democracy. So the core concept is ridiculous. But if you have a king and he's doing something wrong, there's bad things happening in society, even if it's not his fault necessarily, he has to take responsibility for it. If you have a king or whatever they want to call it now, a dictator, he's 100% responsible for anything that goes right, anything that goes wrong. So you see this guy, you know who he is. You know that it's his job to make things go the way they're supposed to go, and if things are not going the way they're supposed to go, he's held responsible. In a democracy, you don't have that. And then every 4 years, you get to, or 2 years with the Congress in the U.S., you get to vote these people out, and you feel like, well, now it was all this person's fault. Now we're going to have this new person. He's going to do something different and fix all these problems. And it just keeps going on and on forever. Where, I mean, every president basically has been hated by the time he was out of office. So it's just the whole thing is ridiculous and just designed, perfectly designed as a control mechanism for special interests, most of which are the Jews and people involved with this system of capitalism.
Well, I think what you said there, well, you hit on something very important, because I think democracy is okay as an idea and as a system if you have a small enough community, and where it's not so complex, too, where people, enough of the people who live there, and even in original democracy, in Greece, where you're at, it wasn't all the people. It was, the more of the landowners or the wealthy or the elites or something. And that's how it was in the United States in the beginning, too. It wasn't that everybody was expected, but there was a large enough number of people that we might call middle class or something who participated. And but you, in the world today, and in a country like the United States or European Union, you've got so many people, and diverse people now, because they're not, because of multiculturalism, multiracialism. You've got all this and all these complex issues and all this government secrecy and all this baloney going on. It's no possible way that there can be anything that you'd call democracy going on. So it's a big farce, and like have to look at his name to be able to
Makaliakos.
Say Makaliakos says, we have to tell people this. We need to express this instead of kind of catering to it and saying, well, we're for democracy too. We just want to change some things.
Because it would be lying anyway.
Yeah, right. And we don't want to do that anymore. We're sick of lies. To kind of tie in with your... Go ahead.
I was just going to say one thing about democracy. In my tour, I give a speech on Mars Hill, which is St. Paul's Hill. It's where Christianity was first introduced to Europe by St. Paul. I give a speech there, and from St. Paul's Hill, you can see the whole city. And you can see the spot where the original Athens democracy, starting in the 5th century B.C., took place, and it was 5,000 men could gather there, and they were all male landowners, and they voted on laws rather than – there was none of this electing a representative. To talk about – to even compare what – and I'm not even saying that I would support that type of a system, but to even compare that to – modern parliamentary democracy is ridiculous. I mean, there's zero comparison between the two systems.
Right. And let me add in here too. I was going to say in the first hour that I want listeners I'm going to give this little deal, because I know you won't, people should still consider donating to your sites, which means to you, and you, even though you now have found this job, it's not covering everything at all, and it doesn't mean that you don't need some help, and you're doing so much for us, so I don't want people to think that you don't need donations, because I'm sure you do. Daily Stormer, yeah, on the day myself, things have gotten real slow, and I haven't even covered my server costs, so I'll put in a plug for myself too. on the Daily Stormer now, you did feature this story, I'm glad, from about Mark Glenn, the what he posted on his Ugly Truth site, I guess. He ran the story about the rally in Athens that we were just talking about, and then he made some comments on there, and he talked about criticizing, worrying about people who are national socialists or people in the white nationalist movement or whatever who carry on too much about he calls them the Nazi. He calls it Nazi baggage, and behave like a cult that worships Adolf Hitler and so on. And in the end, they're simply serving Zionist interests, because you can never change the idea in Western world that people now have about Hitler. And it's not going to change, is what he is saying. He's been saying this for a long time. as a matter of fact. And he even says here it has penetrated down to the cellular level. So we don't want to bring that into it. Therefore you're helping the Jews and the Zionists. And you know he's referring to you here, among probably a few other people. But you know who else fits in here is Veronica Clark, who he may have, I don't know if it's him or someone else who was recently praising her book Black Nazis. But you know, she started out and basically she started out her first couple of websites, which she doesn't have them anymore, but were totally, the talk about cultish Hitler. I mean, we're totally, you know, worshiping Hitler in a sense, you know, but a lot of people liked him. I liked him because you saw a lot of good photographs and read some good stuff there. But I'm just going to say that right now, you know, he's referring to you because you use a lot of pictures of Hitler. So what can you say about that or in answer to him?
Well, first I would like to thank Ben Garland, who is helping me with the site, and he's the one who put together that short piece there. He's doing an excellent job. I just want to give him some credit for that. I'm very happy with what he's doing on the site. It was been hard to find people to help run the thing. I'm doing a lot of this stuff too myself, but. Anyway, it's going, and we're going to get to a point where the site is going to run very well. I think it is already. There's some bugs. You know, I keep saying it's a beta version. But with Mark Glenn, this, I don't know. He just looks for any reason he can to attack white people and white people who want to stand up for their own interests. That's just the bottom line with this guy. The concept that we should lie about Hitler, lie about the history in order to try and trick people into, I don't know, supporting whatever it is that he wants people to support. I don't really know. I guess his main agenda ostensibly is to end the wars in the Middle East. But at the same time, you know, he's attacking the best hope for ending these wars, which is European white countries, nationalism, as obviously none of us have any interest in going and having anything to do with these Muslims in their gross countries. I think his agenda is different than what he presents it as. I think he's more about this Jewish-backed invasion of our countries than he is about anything else. And of course, the Golden Dawn does not tolerate these people. They don't say, "Oh, we'll make an alliance with these filthy people on the streets selling drugs and prostitutes." There's none of that. I mean, of course, they say they have no desire to invade these countries. No desire to hurt any of these people when they're in their own countries. But that's not enough for somebody like Mark Glenn. He wants them to be embraced. You know, I don't know what it's just. He's catering who have no idea what's going on, because when you're here and you see what these Muslims are doing to Europe, the idea of forming some kind of quote alliance with them, I don't even know what it actually means. He's refused repeatedly to explain in real terms what he means when he talks about an alliance with Muslims.
Well, I think a lot of his people who like him or follow him are not white, but they're very anti-Jewish. And I'm not saying there aren't also white people, but there's, you know, we have groups, we have so many who are anti-Jewish and also very much anti-Israel, kind of even more than just anti-Jewish and anti-Zionist, but they're not white. And so they don't relate to, you know, the white nationalist movement very well. And they want us all to forget about race in a sense and just go after the Jews. And there's a lot of people who believe that because the Jews are our greatest enemy. But I have never gone along with that myself. And I think that more and more I'm convinced that, and I think that we need to have our white movement, and we need to be, you know, agreeable with others who are, you know, want the same things that we want for their people. But there's a lot of anti-whiteness in there. So in his anti-whiteness, he's the one who is helping the Jews and the Zionists, because their main agenda is to destroy the white race. I believe so.
Yeah, we're their biggest threat. You don't see these Arabs doing much besides rioting. I don't think anybody else is capable of stopping these Jews, besides the white European people. I think we're the only ones capable of organizing and combating them on the level that the Jews function on. Because, I mean, you see these Muslims, they're very primitive, savage type people. You know, I don't have anything against whatever they're doing in their own countries. It's none of my business any more than what tigers are doing in the jungles of Asia is any of my business. But they're not, they have low IQs. They're not going to organize and deal with these core problems that the Jews have created, which are very high level problems that they've created. The Jews are very intelligent. You're not going to get a way to deal with that. I mean, look at this thing in Egypt. The way these people behave, it's just they're like animals. So they're not going to ever be able to about the Jews. And if Mark Glynn really cared about dealing with the Jewish problem, he would be able to understand that. But I think he is much more about promoting his own racial agenda, which has much more in common with the Jewish racial agenda than it does with our own white racial agenda. Because honestly, Israel, this is not my problem. My problem is the U.S. government funding this country, and the people from this country or dual citizens, whatever, the Jews running my country and the countries of my brothers and sisters in Europe and the rest of the world. I don't view him as helpful in any way. I think he's very destructive, and I think people are pretty much catching on to that. Like you said, I don't think there's many white people following him.
Well, you know what it comes down to? This foreign immigration is the biggest problem we have, and is doing the most damage to us. And this is Jews have been behind this all along, and you know, all over the world where we are, this is taking place, and this is what is slowly destroying our identity. Well, how about another story you had? We can use that as an example. This Klein, I was glad to see this morning that you had put that was there on the Stormer. I thought it would be there. I read it last night, and he's this Ron, what is his name, Ron Klein or whatever. He's been writing Time Magazine forever. Joe Klein, yeah. He's, you know, been writing for them forever. He writes these essays every month, every week, I mean. I never look at Time Magazine anymore, but, Kevin McDonald had written about it. And so what he wrote this time, I found, as I say, I don't read this stuff much, but I found it shockingly kind of a step beyond anything I've read before. In his attack on whites and how wonderful it is that this country is soon, you know, is racism will soon be totally stamped out, what they call racism, which means, you know, the white, any kind of white people's power, any kind of white authority or white influence in the United States. But it's every European, you know, a European place where Europeans live. And so comment on that, you know, because this is this is where the problem is. And somebody like Mark Glenn is not gonna do anything about this. He's not doing anything about immigration. He doesn't care.
No. Briefly on the larger issue of immigration, this is something that it can't be fixed. All of these social problems, you know, if gays are allowed to marry and these types of things, that all the pornography culture and all these are things that are horrible, but they can all be fixed. You can get rid of that stuff. You cannot get rid of total destruction of everything by these immigrants. I mean, they're replacing our population with these people in all of our countries, and this is something that cannot be undone. This is what Dominique Venner, who was a French nationalist who shot himself in the Cathedral de Notre Dame a couple months ago. This is what he had in his suicide note. He talked about gay marriage, but he said, you know, this is something that we could undo. What cannot be undone is the replacement of our people. And so it really is the biggest issue beyond all of this stuff. You know, the obviously the economic abuses and all of this stuff is horrible. But the core issue that we are going to be exterminated literally via this mass immigration and then the low birth rate, the encouraging of race mixing. This is the core issue, and if somebody's not addressing that, as Mark Glenn does not, then they're completely useless. But as far as this recent article that Kevin MacDonald wrote about, this Joe Klein, I mean, it's just keeps getting more and more extreme what these people are willing to say.
Yeah, and in your face, boy, in our faces.
Yeah, and it becomes more ridiculous the more of this that you see. And even, you know, like the one of the most ridiculous things is when Cameron came out after that Woolwich incident and said Islam is a religion of peace. And they all say this. You hear this constantly, Islam is a religion of peace. And it's like, when? What historical period are you referring to when Islam was a religion of peace? There's no – it's just an insane, absurd statement. But they repeat it over and over again, and that's what they do with all these things. They're all so crazy that when you hear them the first time, you're like, well, that doesn't even make any kind of basic sense. But they say it so many times that it's a psychological thing. It begins to stick into your brain. And they've done this with the white guilt and the idea that somehow it's fantastic that the white race is going to be destroyed completely and that it'll just be all these savage people from third world countries with low IQs and no basic even any kind of culture or anything, just all living in third world type conditions inside of what were once our noble and great nations.
Yeah, and we're getting more third world here. Well, here where I am in the States, you know, I can see it. I mean, we are, it's, and you know, these things, they speed up after once you start to notice a little bit. They're first, they're slow. It's slow, but then all of a sudden it'll be there, you know, full fledged, maybe not full fledged, but bad enough where, and once you're in a third world, what was I thinking of something yesterday that brought this to my mind? I thought, God, I'm in a third world country here. And, once you're there, there's no way to get out because nobody cares and nobody's going to listen to you when you lose your representation.
This is the way these people live. I mean, the idea that bringing them into our countries is going to make them start living like us, it doesn't make any sense. Spending literally hundreds of billions of dollars pouring this money into these countries did not make them any more like our countries. It just made it worse for these people. I mean, looking at it from their angle, this money that's gone in there has not helped them at all. It shot up their birth rates to a level that they have no chance of ever being able
to
sustain without these handouts from white countries. But you know, of course, people into your country, it's going to be more and more third world. That's what they do. That's how these people are. They can't function in a urban type environment. I mean, you look at just even the American black neighborhoods. They live just, it's sickening the way these people live.
And yeah, Andre, I just want to say that somebody's calling from an undisclosed number. And while I realize some people have reasons for having undisclosed numbers, I have had bad luck with answering these calls. And I have said on this program that I'm not going to answer any calls from undisclosed numbers. So if you don't mind, I'm not going to answer this. And so, caller, you can just hang up. Thank you. Okay. Do people who have undisclosed numbers, do they not have access to a regular number? At the same time, if they would want to call with that?
I don't know. I think there's like a star number. You can press star and then two numbers where it will disclose your I don't know what they call that, anonymous blocked number.
Yeah. Well, I know there's somebody who calls with an undisclosed number. I don't know if I should write this down, what this PSTN is, and see if it's the same person all the time. But and I don't particularly
want
him on the line. So, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting, but I just want to let that person know. Where were you?
Yeah, I posted it on my site from Council of Conservative Citizens, I think, did a write-up about this HUD housing and how there's literally an organized plan by the president of the United States, who is a black man, to, as we are all well aware, to move these people into every single white neighborhood. I reposted it. I changed the title a little bit. I do this sometimes. I don't know if this bothers the people who originally wrote the articles, but probably not too much with that site. And I changed it. Nowhere to run. You have nowhere left to run. They're going to put these people in all of your neighborhoods. And I mean, everybody knows what happens. It's not some kind of a secret mystery. That it just shoots up crime when you bring all these non-whites into. It's a fact. It's not anything that anybody would debate. I mean, even the people supporting it would not debate that issue. They would just come up with some kind of crazy, way to say that it's our fault that they commit these crimes. But I mean, everybody knows they're going to start breaking the windows out of your cars. They're going to start going through your backyard, getting your lawnmower.
Well, in spite of that, if you just don't even want to live around them. I mean, I read that alarmed me too. I'm glad you brought that up because I find that extremely alarming. And this is where when they make things law, and we are a law-abiding people, white people, European people, some more than others, the Germans the most, I guess. God help them. But, you know, we tend to, when they make something law, it's very, well, we don't want to break it. We're not rioting type of people, you know, and we don't go out and start saying we're going to bring down the government or something. We want to vote for things, you know, we want to vote things in or out or whatever. And you can't do it more and more. So they know how, I've been saying, and I'm not the only one, but they know what's coming, and they know how to get around these things. And this is a terrible idea, and we ought to start complaining about it in a big way right now, before it goes any further. And it's all about the right of association, to associate with who you want to associate.
Freedom
with.
Of association, yeah.
Freedom of, and they're saying that you cannot because. We have to help these black people who have not yet achieved equality with you. Well, they're never going to. How often can you say that?
No, they're never going to. It's just never going to happen. Any more than Chihuahuas are going to achieve the equality with German Shepherds. It's just not. It's not going to happen. It's biologically. Scientifically impossible.
Right.
So, and it's just they're using these people who, you know, all things considered, are themselves not really, I mean, they're so manipulated. They're not, clearly they're benefiting from it, but all things being equal, without these Jews, these people would be no threat at all to us. Mm-hmm. So, they're using these people as a battering ram against us. So,
yes, and using their ignorance, because it's like here we have another story today. I'll just bring this up briefly. And let me briefly also say that if anybody listening, there's quite a few listeners, have a serious, really want to ask Andre a question, or, you know, or just make a quick comment or something, you're welcome to call. And the number is 830-443-4911. But try to have it sort of brief. But you're very welcome to call if you want to call in and talk to Andre. But not with a undisclosed number. So, but here's this story again. You know, Trayvon Martin's mother, Sabrina Fulton. You know, now she's become an activist. I heard this on NPR when I was driving around yesterday, and it's in the news story this morning. But here's what she says after she goes on and on about no more Trayvon, I won't get this from Trayvon or that from Trayvon or whatever. Then she continues, no high school graduation for Trayvon, no college for Trayvon, no grandkids coming from Trayvon, all because of a law that has prevented the person who shot and killed my son to be held accountable and to pay for this awful crime. This is confusing because it's because of the law. It's because of the law, but that this law has prevented that by preventing Zimmerman from being held accountable, that's why there's no more Trayvon. It's not because of that law, and it's not because he wasn't held accountable either. And I really think that they are more upset about Zimmerman, his family, more upset about Zimmerman not being found guilty than they are about Trayvon being gone, because I imagine they knew he was headed for trouble. And now they can turn him into a great martyr, you know, and with her foundation and everything. So, you know, the Jews help them, and these shyster Negroes who are heads of these like Sharpton, but they help these people to remain stupid and not figure out what's really how to really live in this country, but just to misunderstand everything and then run out in the street and start yelling and screaming until they get what they want. So,
the whole thing just demonstrates how insane the media is, how they're just capable of anything. Because that stand your ground law did not play any role at all in the verdict. I mean, it might have been brought up at the trial, but it was dismissed because that has to do with if you get attacked and you do have the opportunity to run, you're allowed to shoot the person because, you know, it's degrading to have to run away from a person, basically, I think is the idea behind it. And Zimmerman was on the ground having his head slammed into the concrete. He didn't have an opportunity to run away. So the stand your ground law did not even have any relationship to the case. It was not connected to it at all. And somehow they're talking about this stand your ground law, and it's just a basic fact that anybody can look at the trial and see that this did not play a role in the outcome of the case, and yet they're just talking about it like it did without,
because they want to get rid of stand your ground along with the gun rights. They want to get rid of it, so they use it that way. That's the dishonesty. Here's somebody calling. Go ahead and talk while I take this call.
Well, they can what these blacks are basically saying now that it came out that Trayvon did attack Zimmerman, and they can't, I mean, it's a fact now. They established this as a fact that it was Trayvon that attacked George Zimmerman. And they're basically saying, well, we have a right to attack people who are non-black and beat them. And they should not have a right to defend themselves. That's ultimately what these blacks are saying to us. And of course, they're being manipulated into this, but I think it's what a lot of them actually believe.
Well, they do believe it because they're told this stuff, and they don't, you know, they're not trying to figure anything out and be good citizens and you know, get along with the white people and other people in the country.
Yeah.
They don't, they're not interested, and they're not encouraged to be interested in that, in spite of what Obama says. Okay. Yeah, here's this caller. Hello, caller. Give us your name and where you're calling from, please.
My name is Richard. I'm calling from Michigan. And I'd like to say I do feel that Trayvon had been...
Yeah, you know, this is Russ. Okay, Russ, at least you broke down and used a regular number. But you can just use your real name. I don't like the kind of... when you start pretending like you're a black person. And you're just wasting our time when you do that. Okay? So just talk if you want to say something.
I'd like to ask a guest, how do you feel about Michael Collins Piper?
How does who feel about Michael Collins Piper?
You're a guest.
Okay. All right.
I don't really have any comment on him. I know he... I've listened to his show a few times. I've never read any of his books. I know he's associated with Mark Glenn, so, you know, I guess that says a lot to me. You can kind of judge a person by the company they keep. But other than that, I don't have any comment on Michael Collins Piper.
I had a conversation with Mike Piper once where he acknowledged that there is a problem of immigration in European countries, but he doesn't like it to be blamed on Muslims. And what I pointed out to him is, well, Mike, you know, these immigrants, 90% of them that are causing these problems just happen to be Muslim, and that's why, you know, we just, for convenience sake, use that term to refer to these immigrants. They're coming from many different countries, but 90% of them have in common the fact that they are practitioners of the Muslim faith. So he said, well, really? Are you sure about that? He didn't even, the man didn't seem clueless to me. Another thing with the man is that he's very proud of, he has some title that was conferred upon him by, at some conference, some Muslim conference, where they gave him this special honor, special title, you know, which means that he's exalted in the Muslim community, even though, you know, he's not a Muslim. He has a special special title. Do you remember Jiminy or something like that? I forget the term that he is. He's very proud of it. So I think I agree with what you're saying about Mark Glenn. And I think the same would apply, I mean, to Mike Piper. I like what these guys have to say about, you know, the Jay situation, but they just seem to, they just want to deny that there's any problem at all with other people, you know, with immigration. They seem to feel that, you know, I mean, they're kind of like Hisham Talawi does the same thing, you know, he'll say, well,
okay,
I mean.
Okay, let's not go into too many characters. You know, well, you know, I don't want to speak against Mike Piper, who I've known for a long time. But he has made it clear that he gets along real well with black people. He's always lived in Washington, D.C., where there's lots and lots of black people. And he likes black people. He likes he's very, very pro. Well, I would say not just across the board, but he has a lot of, there's a lot of Muslim people he's very good friends with and thinks a lot of. And there are a lot of good people like that. Frederick Tobin is very fond of Iraqis and has traveled to Iranians and traveled to Iran a lot and is very fond of a lot of Muslim people.
They're a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah, right.
They're the best.
In front of the wheel. Yeah, they're the best of the people. So, but Mike Piper is also talks about how he has some American Indian in him, but it's always been like he doesn't even know what's 16th or something or less than that, and he's, then he talks like he's proud of that. So, you know, he just doesn't go for white nationalism. They don't like white nationalism. They just don't like it. And but they don't want to admit, in my opinion, Andre, they just don't want to admit that we are in the kind of, we're in trouble of being genocided. That we are being genocided. Mike Piper poo-poos that. He says there's always going to be white people. Then he'll say, yeah, white people are so smart.
I don't know Mike
and
Piper, and
they've been in charge
of
things, so I don't either.
As a person.
So I just have that disagreement. So, okay, Russ, thanks for your call. So where were we, Andre? See, some of these calls don't take us anywhere at all, except into gossipy stuff.
Drama.
Drama. So, but it is, though, something to be said that there are white people who have a hard time being really loyal, being white loyalists. And often, though, it is because of something in their life. There's some little bit of non-whiteness, or there's just the way they've lived and the people they know. And of course, you can point to all kinds of white people who are really horrible. And say, God, I like these brown people over here, these better ones, you know, better than these white people. Well, sure, I would too, but I think that we have to be racial, and then every race has to have its better and its worse peoples, and we have to work with our own people. We have to improve our own people. We have to, you know, we have to stand behind our own people and accept all of them and do the best we can with them. You can't, there's a lot of these people, I'm getting on a rant here and now I'm going to quit, that want to take the best from everywhere and then not claim the worst, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've had black friends and people that I really liked a lot. I mean, they're different than us, obviously, but, you know, I'm not about like race hate or anything. It's just that at this point, I think we need to be somewhat aggressive about defending our people just because we're so late in the game here. And it's kind of hard to know how exactly to say these things and where to draw the line. As far as how you present this stuff, but I'm not trying to hurt anyone. I don't have any feelings towards. I'm not a white supremacist. You know, in an article a while ago, several months ago, I looked up the definition. You know, defined what white supremacy means, and it's a desire to rule over all other peoples. That whites have a right to rule over all other peoples, and I don't have any such desire. I would love for these people to be successful and live meaningful lives in their own countries.
Well, right. I mean, that's all. That's how everybody feels. I mean,
the whole
thing is that this mixing together doesn't work. I mean, that's even. Oh, I'm not going to bring that up. But you know, race mixing and even. Ethnicity, too much ethnicity mixing, or you know, too much mixing of very different people from different continents and so on, does not work out well. And who's been behind it? It's been a Jewish plan all along, the international Jews, to create an international world because they benefit from it.
Yeah. And what's interesting, kind of a related point, is the way that the people who support the wars and all these international programs, which don't help anyone, are the same people calling us racists while we're saying that we very much support these people being in their own countries and being successful. And, you know, even foreign aid programs, I'm not so sure that I'm totally – I don't think you could cut them out completely now. I mean, you would have to find a proper moral humanitarian way to deal with these countries after we solved these problems. But it's just that – right now, I mean, we're so far in that to spend any kind of time really talking about, oh, the poor browns and blacks, it just seems kind of ridiculous at this point, to put that as any kind of, a priority, because their numbers continue to just shoot up. I read that by, I think, 2100, the population of Africa is going to quadruple.
Well, you know, you can talk about that forever, but don't get anywhere because, you know, these people who are worried about saving the lives of Africans are just absolutely stupid and insane.
It's just complete nonsense. What are you going to do? I mean, if you were able to feed every one of them every single meal, to keep the leaders from just keeping the food and selling it, whatever they do when you send them aid, if you were able to actually feed every single one of them, they would still be figuring out any way they could to kill each other. That's just what they do. I mean, they've been doing this for more than 10,000 years. The Negroes spread out across from East Africa about 10,000 years ago and murdered all the little, they were kind of like Asian type people, who were relatively peaceful and unable to deal with the Negro, aggression. They just all basically got slaughtered. Literally got slaughtered. There's just little, like, what they call Bushmen now. It's what was his name? Colin Turnbull spent some time with them in Africa. The anthropologist in the 50s. There's very few of them left. 10,000 years ago, they controlled almost all of Africa, and the Negroes just went through and killed them all. So, and then they started killing each other, and that's what they've been doing, and they're still doing in Detroit or any other American city. This is just their core behavior pattern.
Yeah, and getting back to Adolf Hitler then, you know, he had it right when he said, let nature take its course. The overall way to solve all these problems is to let nature take its course amongst these people. And they, just like with the animal populations, they will keep the population in line from getting, if you get too much population expansion or whatever, and their habitat can't support them, or their habits either. They then die off. It's sad, but you don't go and try to save them all. And then you've got this huge number and you're put nature all out of balance. And what are you going to do? Then you destroy even more people. So this is the way it's been done in this world since this, on this planet, you know, for ages and ages. And now we want to change it and we want to save everybody. The whole idea of saving everybody from sickness, disease, or whatever, and not doing anything about, and then thinking that you're going to do birth control without people saying, oh, that's so cruel, just doesn't work. It's been shown it doesn't work. Why don't we? So we're back to the wisdom of the National Socialist philosophy, which is back to nationalism, where people mind their own business and aren't trying to save the world.
Yeah, it's incredibly condescending the way these people want to deal with these third world people. I think a lot of them maybe I can't really relate to Africa, but when we're talking about, you know, the different third world people, the Latinos and the some of the Asians, they had a way of life that worked for them, and they did the things that they did. They lived in their huts or whatever, and they had their animals and their farms. And I think it was
their diets, you know, and
they had their medicines and these things. And I think it was, in a lot of ways, it's special and beautiful in a way. I can say that the way these people lived. I don't have anything on any level of my being against the existence of other people on the planet. I mean, I guess everybody that reads my site, knows anything about me, knows how I feel about this. It's just the issue of them coming and taking away from us, and that we are no longer allowed to exist as a distinct people anymore.
Yeah, and we do need to get across to white people or anybody else who wants to learn from it. But who's doing this and why they're doing it, and you know what the consequences are going to be and so on. We really need to do a good job of this. I guess there are a lot of people trying, and you're one. But let's get back to your websites then on this note, and
sure,
both of them, but especially your new one. And how, you know, we need media. We need our own media. People are always saying that. So where do you, you know, how do you see yourself fitting in there, and what, I know you probably don't have any new plans for the moment. You're pretty filled up. What would you like to say about all of that?
Well, I would actually like to get some radio type stuff going on the site. Clement, who's another person who contributes to Daily Stormer, is working on this, getting something together in that department. A lot of people enjoy the radio stuff, and there's so little of it. You know, I have a radio section on Daily Stormer, and it's, I mean, I post your shows, but it's hard to know really who else is even worth posting. I, of course, like the Truth Militia. I think they've gotten – I know you had some criticisms of them before, but I think they've gotten
that. I won't open my mouth. I haven't changed my mind, but I better not say anything.
Yeah, they're good guys. They're for real.
They're good guys, but boy.
Yeah, I understand.
I just don't think that.
Well, I think they've gotten a lot better.
I listened to one not long ago. It wasn't any better.
Okay. But anyway, that's something I would like to do that, to get the radio going, because there's so little of it that I'm able to agree with.
And I'm glad you're really thinking that. Cool. I think there's not enough good radio. I agree. I have a hard time finding anything. You know, this person keeps calling, and every time I answer it, he's hung up. I wonder what kind of a joke he's trying to play. Anyway, I'm not going to answer again. I've answered twice, and he's hung up. So okay, Ray, you'd like to get radio, and you've got some people there who you can depend on now, and they are. These two you mentioned
are
really good.
Yes,
people.
Mm-hmm. They are good.
And so I think you're right. I think the idea of having a lot coming from one place, and if you kind of hopefully can slowly build up, I don't like this word, but I'll use it, kind of an empire, or, you know, a big place where there's a lot going on there to defend and promote the interests of white people, that would be just great.
Yes, and I would like to get other people involved. I mean, anybody who is in line with this type of thing. I don't want anything about space Nazis, but you know, other people in the white movement who would. Anybody who would like to contribute, I would be happy to put their material up. The site is doing very well. The other day, it's only 2 weeks now about that it's been up. And the other day, I got 17,000 page views. I was pretty happy about that.
That's amazing.
It's going to be very big. My idea is to have it sort of be like the white nationalist version of InfoWars. This was kind of the original idea, because I see how successful that model that Jones has put together is. Very, very incredibly successful what he's done with that, with his whole.
Yeah, and he's very much the star of it, and he's very much. Hands-on, I think, isn't he? So I was just going to say that I think that it would be important that this not go into the hands of too many people doing their own thing, but that you would somehow be able to exercise your vision over it so that it has a cohesiveness, you know.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I post the stuff that's the mainstream stuff that's just kind of semi-objective, at least, news. But as far as any kind of commentary, I'm really trying to make sure that stays in line with my own perception of what is appropriate to present as far as an ideology. Jones will post stuff that's disagrees with itself, you know, I mean, not with itself, but different things from different people who disagree with each other, and they're both presented without any kind of comment, unqualified, just two people saying completely different things, and he's presenting them both. Jeff Rentz obviously does this even to an even more extreme degree than Alex Jones does, but I don't want that to happen. But there's definitely some people who I think pretty well share the same perceptions
as I do. I wanted to congratulate you on about a month ago, I guess, the Glenn Miller show. I very much enjoy hearing this man. I've still not gotten a chance to call him myself. I'm always meaning
well,
to.
Well, I have a message from someone. I'm supposed to get in touch with Glenn and you about something. And I've been wanting to talk to you over Skype, so I don't have to write it all out. And you were kind of you kind of weren't ready to turn your Skype on, I guess. But so there is something coming up there.
Well, I have to go to the hotel.
Yeah, right. So I won't say that now, but there is something. So we'll have to Skype about that later. Yeah, Glenn Miller is a lot of fun. So thanks, and I would always like to have him back again. I haven't been talking
to
him.
You should have him as a regular guest. He's
would you like to get on with him, you and he together?
I would. Yeah, I would enjoy that. Yes,
that's what we'll do. Okay, we've got only some people hung up, so I guess we're on our last leg here. I've got 60 seconds. Well, Andre, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a lot of fun, and we had a lot of listeners. I'm sure there'll be a lot of downloads. So how would you like to sign off to the listeners today?
Well, it's been great. I'm very glad to get all this stuff out there. I've been meaning to write about it, and this, I think, works a lot better to just present it all this way. So thank you so much for having me on. I hope we can do this more as I'm here and give some updates about everything that's going on. So thank you very much, Carolyn.
Okay, and once again, a very happy birthday to you. Give our best to all those wonderful people in Greece, and have a good show tonight with your buddies. So signing out, I guess the music is playing. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager for the White Network on Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Good day.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.